Hello, thank you for joining me. This is Ernestine Lyons, host of Quick to Politic, the podcast, the social commentary show that explores topics ranging from social justice to history, economics, small business, and of course, local and national politics. Thank you for joining me. All right, we are now live on Facebook. Okay, welcome everyone. I have a very special guest here today. We are joined by the very beautiful, very talented Alexis Wiley in the flesh. And
you're sweet. Thank you. I'm honored to be here with you.
Oh my gosh. No. Someone asked me recently, like, what got you involved in politics? And honestly, it was meeting you, like, because like you gave an opportunity to somebody who was thinking about it and seeing it as this out there goal, like one day I'll get involved in politics. And then, you know, I ran into you at my favorite restaurant, Shangri-La, and you were nice. You gave me your card and you were just like, you know, and we ended up in a conversation. And then I ran into you again at Challenge Detroit Fellowship, and you were still just as, you know, warm and nice. And you know, then I ended up with an opportunity based on our conversation interning with the city of Detroit. And then I eventually, you know, transitioned into a role working with the Civil Rights Inclusion and Opportunity Department. And, you know, then I transitioned into working in small business development. So then I ran for office because I felt empowered. So, you know, I just kind of want to let folks know who you are. You have nearly 20 years of experience in TV, news and media, government and corporate and community relations. She is a skilled strategist, and her firm. What is the name of your firm?
Moment Strategies.
Awesome. Oh, my God. And, you know, she's just like effective, and she connects people to where they need to be for the needs of the greater community. And, you know, she just really makes an impact overall and has been ever since you came to Detroit. So tell me a little bit more about, like, you came to Detroit and, you know, you just became this rock star. So how did what's your journey that led you here?
Okay, so before I go into my journey, I first want to say how proud I am of you, because like you took every opportunity that you had and turned it into more and built on it. And for you to have the strength to put yourself out there to run, I mean, that's huge. We need so many more women, Black women specifically, who want to put themselves out there to run for office, because there aren't enough of our voices in elected leadership. Especially, I love that you're not doing it. I mean, it's Detroit's wonderful, and it's a wonderful place to be elected. But I think you're really breaking barriers in other areas where they're not used to as many strong Black women who are running things. And I think it's so exciting. This is like the very beginning for you. So I'm super excited about that. More than anything, because that's, you know, that's why we're supposed to meet each other. That's why we're supposed to be able to connect, is to help elevate each other. And that's just, it's just cool to see that you've done this. So I first want to throw that out there before I start talking about myself.
Thank you. That is so sweet. And, you know, it's just like, it's really important to be able to provide, you know, opportunities for each other and to have that network. So that kind of opens up to one of my questions around, you know, talking about encouraging young women to reach new heights and in politics and female leadership and cultivating, you know, and mentoring that next generation of civil servants. And, you know, so what is going to be your legacy? You were Mike Duggan's chief of staff, and, you know, you stepped away, and now you are, you know, running your own strategy, you know, at company, and you're just doing all the things that are, you know, going to continue to make, you know, folks, you know, just amazing. So, what is going to be the legacy of just leaving the political world and, you know, cultivating the next generation?
Oh, well, for me, one, I kind of got into this in a way that was just, you know, super non-traditional. I'm originally from Los Angeles, born and raised. and always like to tell people stories. I always like to meet people. And I was never that comfortable talking about myself, but I liked talking about everybody else. And I liked being able to get to know people. So I went to journalism school at Northwestern. And at Northwestern, you know, I was beginning to tell these stories. Like I got a chance, like one of my first big projects I did was I went, you know, Northwestern is in Evanston, in like a very nice, safe area of Evanston, and big houses and all that stuff. And one of the stories I really wanted to tell was what was going on with gangs in Chicago, mostly on the west side of Chicago, where there was a lot going on. And I don't even remember how I got connected, but next thing you know, I was like doing a whole like day with these young gang members who were talking to me about really just how they felt like they didn't have, they would be doing other things if they had other opportunities. If they had other things they could be doing, other ways to provide for their families, other ways to take care of themselves, put food on the table, they'd be doing them. But this was the only real option that they had. So that was like one of my first big projects in college. And after that, I always be like wanted to tell people stories. So I went to, my first job was in Shreveport, Louisiana. And I started there 2 months before Hurricane Katrina. So at like 22, I was down in Louisiana, you know, out here. Suddenly I started out as just kind of like the reporter that they, you know, the young cute kid that you put out to do like product testing in the mall and all this stuff. And I was like, this isn't what I went to journalism school for. I wanted to do more. So crazy thing happened, Hurricane Katrina hit, and they suddenly needed me to cover really tough things that were happening in the city and in the state. So I began doing stories that really looked at people's lives. So I did a story about an investigative series about how there were all these prominent people in town who are renting subpar housing to people who,
having an audio problem. I'm just going to cut in for just like half a second. I'm quite sure everyone else can still hear you, but I lost the connection of the audio. So hang on just one second.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Okay, and we're back.
Can you hear me now? Am I good? Okay. Was it my end or you? Because my like Wi-Fi goes in and out. So
nope, it was me. It was me because I use a podcast microphone now, and you know I'm still getting used
to it. Fancy.
Yeah, right. So it was all me. Sorry about that.
Okay. So anyhow, I began telling stories that I felt like really impacted people. And after leaving Shreveport, I was an investigative reporter in Columbus, Ohio. And that's where I won an Emmy for really looking at how taxpayer dollars were being spent. And in relation to equipment and stuff in Ohio State, it was kind of a funny story, but it won an award. And then I moved to Detroit. And when I got here, it was like, I don't know if people really know this, but like, I feel like Detroit was very similar to me to Los Angeles, in that it was a very tight-knit Black community, really strong roots, really strong pride of the middle class, and I and the roots of the city. So I instantly felt like Detroit was home. And at Fox 2, I started telling stories about things that I felt like were really impacting the city, you know, and people that nobody was talking about at the time. So I had a series called Redefining Detroit that was really like the positive things that were happening. Because I was just so tired of always telling.
I thought it was amazing because it was always like really great stories that inspired you to do better.
I appreciate that. That was what I wanted to do. So long story short, I ended up covering the campaign, and I didn't know the mayor. I didn't know Sheriff Napoleon. I didn't know anybody. I was just a reporter covering it. And it was kind of funny, like in the back of my head at that time, I kind of thought, you know, I spent so many years thinking about all the things that should be done. You know, what if I could see if I could actually do those things, you know, instead of yelling and putting people on the news and saying what should be done? What if I actually were doing it? And then randomly, the mayor, he got my phone number, and this was after he'd won the election, and he called while I'll never forget, I was sitting in my desk in the newsroom, and I answer the phone and I hear, "Hi, this is Mike Duggan." And I'm like, "Mike, why is Mike Duggan calling me?" And I thought maybe he had a story for me. And it turns out he wanted me to join as spokesperson for the administration. So I was like, you know, these are opportunities that don't, I loved my career. Like, I loved Fox 2. I loved TV. I had a very clear path. I just resigned my contract with Fox 2. It was, and everyone there was wonderful. Management was wonderful. My friends were my coworkers. Like, it was just great. But something told me that, like, if you get an opportunity to actually try to do good in a city that you care about, you might as well take it and see if you can do it. So, and also I think as a reporter, you always kind of want to know what does it really look like? What is it really like to actually make those decisions, right? Not cover what happened in the room, but actually to be in the room, right? Like in Hamilton, the room where it happens, right? So I took the job despite the fact that I was terrified. And like, I can't tell you how nervous I was. I did it. And 3 months later, after coming in the communication side, I became chief of staff. And in that role, I got a chance to do so many great things and so many things I'm proud of, like launching Grow Detroit's Young Talent, making it a citywide program, launching the first assistance program for the Detroit Water Fund. Just really doing things that I'm so proud of. It was just an opportunity that doesn't come every day. And I'm so grateful that I had it. I think it gives you a chance to kind of see how does this all work? And then can you play a part in making things better? Can you do something good? You won't do everything perfect, but can you do something where you're able to make an impact? And that's what I tried to do. And I hope I was able to do. And now, you know, after having my baby, who's now 5 months old, it was very much like, you know, I wanted to kind of shift because I've been in that job for 6 years. Longest job I'd ever had was working as being chief of staff for the city of Detroit. And it's 24/7 and it's super rewarding and it's wonderful, but you also kind of think, okay, what else is there? And I'd always wanted to do my own thing and really build a business and something where I could really take what I learned in journalism about how to tell a really good story and just the basic tenets of it, connect it to how does government work, right? The legislative process, the administrative process, and then connect it to people. Because, I mean, that was really the core of what I did in my job was also make sure that we're connecting with people. And that's why I wanted to take the job. So trying to really pull all of that together while also knowing that, and right as I was, me and the mayor were talking about me making this transition, he was like, okay, well, will you do one last thing and run this, my reelection campaign? So I was like, okay, well, I can do that and also build a business and see how it goes. So that's really where I am right now. So I'm like a few months in, left in November, like trying to kind of balance my daughter and building a business and running the reelection campaign. And just, you know, so far so good. I know that was like a long, long way of telling it, but
No. I think, you know, you hit on a lot of the other questions that I had as well, because, you know, you went from one thing where you just signed a contract, you know, to stick with Fox 2, you were loving it. And then, you know, you honestly, like, no idea that Mike Duggan's going to call you to say, like, hey, I want you to work with me. And, you know, it's just, but my question to you is, which was more fast paced, working in, you know, Detroit is one of the largest cities, you know, in Michigan, and, you know, in terms of size, and then, you know, you've got a lot of moving parts, you've got, you know, so many different things going on. And so which was more fast paced, the world of journalism, where you're covering things and you're just out there and it's like nonstop. And, you know, I've interviewed folks like Randy Wimley and Larry Spurl, and they just, you know, are, it never.
Sorry.
Get over there. Bless you.
Live.
Hey, we're human. So, but my question, it's really around which one was more fast paced and which, you know, do you think was more, okay, it just never stops and more rewarding, really.
Right. Okay. So on the question of rewarding, they were both rewarding, right? I loved journalism. I loved reporting. I have the utmost respect for the job that so many are doing right now. I would say in terms of the difference between what like being chief of staff and then being a reporter, being chief of staff, it doesn't stop, right? When I was a reporter, you put together your story, you're live on air, it runs, you're done, right? Like most stories, you're done. You stay in touch and maybe there's another chapter, but you're done. With government and management, it's like there's it doesn't end. Like you're literally like, okay, what's the next step? What's this? What's that? And you're constantly on. You're like on 24/7. That's what I didn't expect was because you always hear about people like, oh, government, you work 9 to 5, all that stuff. No. And I don't know if it's like what it's like working for anybody else, but work for Mike Duggan, you are 24/7 because he's 24/7. So you got to kind of keep up that pace of constantly being on and trying to make sure that you're responsive to people. Because the other piece is like, when I was on TV, it was your decisions. Like if you did something dumb, or if let's say you look crazy on TV, right? That impacts you. It doesn't touch anybody else. But your decisions when you're in government, and I think really in management probably, your decisions impact others. And I think one thing that was really rewarding was to be able to see your decisions in action. Like just to see it on the street and see someone like, for me, seeing kids walking down the street in their Greta Young Talent shirts on, like see them on that, I was like, oh my gosh, like I still feel like super happy when I see them. Even when like you see kids wearing it in like October, when you know they're not in the program right now, but like they still are proud of like what they did, and they were kids in the city. So that was something that always that mattered to me, that, you know.
Right. And you know, I know that you touched on like, you know, Mike Duggan's leadership style, because he came from the corporate world. I think that, you know, it's nonstop. And, you know, I think that in city government, a lot of times, maybe it's not as fast paced, but, you know, this is a mayor who has presided over a lot of growth in terms of development and a lot of change in the city of Detroit. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I think that, you know, that kind of that could be, you know, why not have a reporter? Why not have someone who is on that 24-hour cycle, you know, work for this administration? Because it, you know, so much innovation that, you know, happened, and, you know, that being a part of that administration, I think that was like a necessary thing. So, and, you know, I love that being a part of the whole doer mentality, and, you know, I can do that, whereas like when you got the call and it's like, oh, there was no moment of like, I don't know about that. It's like, oh, I can do that.
Oh, no. If I made it sound like that, then let me correct myself. There were many moments of, I don't know if I can do that.
Mm.
I mean, no. Like from the very, I was so scared and I was so nervous. I thought, oh my gosh, I know nothing about this. There were 8 million people telling me, you know nothing about this. And I think for me though, there was this voice that was just so clear of like, okay, you're terrified and this is the craziest thing in the whole entire world for you to do, but you need to do it. And I've always been connected and kind of known in those moments where I hear that voice that says, okay, Alexis, do it. And I know I'm scared to death. Deep down, I kind of know it's the right thing. It's going to take me all different kinds of directions, and I won't be able to completely plan it. And there might be some ups, there might be some downs, but it's the right thing. And I listened to that voice despite all of the doubts. I was talking to the mayor like a week ago. We were at a we had a conversation, and he was asking me about like when I first made the transition, like what was that first week like? And I told him, I was like, I actually went to my office on my second day and cried. I cried because I was like, oh my God, did I do something so crazy? Because what kind of led me there was I was talking to a friend who was a reporter, and I had to do an interview. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've made this huge, crazy pivot. is it crazy? Is it, so I guess I tell that story because I think it's really unfair when people aren't honest about what the real experience of taking a risk is like and the ups and downs that you go through, because it's okay to be scared. It's okay to be nervous that you're doing something that's a huge shift. If you weren't nervous, if it didn't scare you, then you're not taking a big enough risk. I've never told that story before, but I think it's I tell it because I think that it shows that it's okay to move in the face of fear and doubt.
Wow. You know, and that's so funny that you mentioned that, because, you know, now you wonder, like, what is moment strategy? It's moment strategies, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah. what is going to be the next thing? What is going to be like some of the challenges and the problems that are now going to be solved by, you know, your firm, your organization, you yeah. being a business owner. And, you know, I don't know. I feel like I don't worry because you've gracefully been able to, like, all right, I'm pivoting, I'm transitioning. And, you know, I think that 2020 was all about the year of transitions and pivots and, you know, just making those changes. And so I'm actually really glad that that's, you know, the message that, you know, you relate. And then also, I love that piece of, like, if something scares you, just lean into it and do it, you know, because even like making a decision to run for office, like, you know, running for city council or, you know, now running for mayor, which, you know, still like kind of a little like it's shaky when I say it, I'm just like, oh, but I know that, you know, this is something that, you know, it's on my heart and I'm gonna try. I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna fight. And so, you know, that's really like, that's a true lesson that I think was something that I can really see in you and from your story and how amazing, you know, you were able to, how amazing you are. And you're able to, like, this is the first time I feel like I'm actually nervous on this show. It's like talking to you about this. I'm not normally this inarticulate. But
you're fantastic. I feel like I'm like on like The View or something like that.
Hush, hush.
Or that show with what's her name? The woman from Sister Sister.
Tia Mowry.
Yeah. What show is that? Do you remember?
It's the take or the talk or something like that.
It's not the talk. It's the, okay. It'll come to me after we're done. But anyhow, I feel because you're like, you're so polished. You're so good. And I think that the cool, I'm sure you had moments like where you're like, I'm running for mayor. And I'm sure there are people who are like, you're young. You're, you know, should you do something like this? But you knew in your heart that there was more you could give and a space that you could occupy and that you didn't need anyone's permission to occupy it. And I think that is so huge. And I think we need to tell people that that process of getting to that place where you know that there is when you know that there's a space you can occupy, it doesn't just mean you just get there. You've got to move. You've got to face the fears. You've got to face the nervousness. You may have to face the tears, but at the end of the day, you get there, especially if you believe that you can do something good. And I'm so excited for you.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Well, enough about me. I think like the next
question. I want to hear more. I know it's enough about you, but even after this, I have to stay on top of this because I think that what you are doing
is investigator in you. It's just like, oh, I got to follow up and see what's happening.
Yeah, no, I'm excited about this.
All right. Well, that's going to lead me into my last question here. Enough. I'm getting all blushy over here. But my last question is around, you know, how does this art of storytelling evolve now that, you know, you are, you know, and you're working on your own business and your own consulting and, you know, you're in a whole different, you know, industry, but you are, you know, just doing more of the same great work. And so how does storytelling now change considering that the industries are changing, you know, yeah. in terms of like reporting and in politics? I think that information is, you know, not just a 24-hour news cycle. It's within milliseconds. People will know about things instantly because of you know, influencers, because of, you know, things like podcasting as a medium, you know, it's more instantaneous and it reaches more people where they are. So how do you see, you know, the evolution of, you know, kind of, I use the term like the death of the fourth estate, where you're not like, it's all opinion. Everything is opinion in journalism now, because you'll listen to somebody like a Jake Tapper or, you know, what's the other guy like on the Parent Fox?
What's his name? Are you thinking Tucker Carlson?
Tucker Carlson, yes. Yeah. Because he's a little bit more opinionated than like Fox and Friends or any of the other shows.
Right.
You know, but then you'll notice that even like Jake Tapper will be very opinionated in one way.
Right. What's his, all of them.
Right. And it's not like it used to be, because, you know, shows like Jon Stewart and, you know, Stephen Colbert, like the Colbert Report and, you know, The Daily Show, they would be that satire. You go to them to get a funny take on the news, but there's so much opinion in journalism now that you're actually getting the same kind of like, I'm going to make fun of this and I'm going to, you know, make people question things. So how do you, you know, continue to tell stories and, or, you know, help move something along in terms of like policy when there's so much competing information out there?
You are 100% right with where things are going. The big challenge that I think we're facing is everything, you know, you're able to choose to listen to the people who you agree with, right? So if you lean super conservative, you will most likely spend more time listening to Fox News or watching Fox News, because they're the people that are, they're speaking your language, right? They're reaffirming everything you believe. If you're somebody who leans, you know, super left and you're, you know, very much a you know, somebody who's on the progressive side of things, you might watch MSNBC because, again, you agree with what they're saying. And there is something that's a little bit scary about that, because everyone believes they're right, but no one actually wants to talk to each other. And we don't want to hear from each other anymore. And I don't know what the solution to that is. I think that I think that the things that are objective journalism is not as prized as it once was, right? Because it may not get as many clicks. I also think where the world is now is there are plenty of people like yourself who are real people who say, look, I can podcast. It doesn't cost me $1 million. I can post a video. I can write my own blog. It's created a way where you can cut through the noise to really share your story. I mean, I think regardless of how you feel about Donald Trump, he is the king of understanding a brand and how to move, right? So he posted on Twitter. He didn't have to say, I'm going to give this story to this reporter and see how they interpret me. He was able to say, I want you to interpret me unfiltered, right? You're going to hear about me from me. And that is, to me, a very powerful place to be, and where more organizations and people need to go to, right? Information is not all controlled by one entity. And I think that is, in my eyes, a great thing, but also a dangerous thing, right? Because you don't have as much of that objective trusted source where you can say, they're gonna be middle of the road and give me all sides, right?
Because often you don't have a filter like a Walter Cronkite who's going to be like this just
non-biased. Right. And I want to make it clear, there are still many, many reporters and many reporters in this Detroit market who do that kind of work every single day, news organizations that do that work every single day. But the shift that's happening right now is that you can, and where I think that when I think of what I'm doing is you have the power to tell your own story. You don't have to rely on someone else to tell your story or filter it. And my hope is that with building this business, what I would like to really see is be able to connect people to things like development that might be happening in their community, give them a better, a stronger say in it, connect them to kind of help make things happen and really still be able to drive progress. Because I think oftentimes people don't know how to talk to each other. People don't know how to find middle ground. And one thing I've always had to do was find the middle ground. I've never really treated things as if they were just all black and white, because I believe that there's a lot of gray And when we stop talking to each other is when progress stops. And my hope is that I do trying to like figure out how to say this right way, but I think that as time continues, there are more people who are kind of like, look, I don't fit 100% in either the box on the right or the box on the left. I'm somewhere in the middle. And those people need a place where they can feel like, hey, my voice matters too. So I think that things will begin to kind of, the pendulum will shift more towards a middle ground moving forward. But I think that we're at a place where, I mean, you think about what happened with George Floyd. To be able to see that story, see what happened unfiltered, right? It was not us having somebody tell us a story. We saw it with our own eyes. The actual power of watching that and watching things unfiltered is tremendous. And I think you're going to continue to see more of that. I mean, something happens, it's up in 2 seconds.
Oh, for sure. For sure. So,
I also think that platforms like yours are powerful. And I mean, literally, you are doing what, you know, 10 years ago would have cost it, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars to do. Someone would have had to provide you a platform. Odds are a company would have had to own, you know, the space that where you were posting it for you to be able to get people to see. Now,
even like radio broadcasting it, that would have
been right.
Real.
You cut out the middleman and everybody's cutting it out. So I think there is power there. But I think that there's still, you know, I think there's still a space for real objective, in-depth storytelling that really allows you to see all sides of something and make your walk away making your own opinion, your own decision on what you think.
Right. All right. And, you know, I'm glad that, you know, because that point, it brings it right back to self-branding is what's happening, you know, with everyone now. And I think people are realizing the power in that. And, you know, like you said, it gives people maybe the voiceless voices. So,
absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for being a part of Quick to Politic. And, you know, thank you for sharing your insight. And, you know, it's just been really, really great to be able to reconnect with you and chat. And thank you so much for your time. And thank you for all those who are watching. Somebody did say that the name of the show was The Real.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. I was like, what is that?
Right.
I follow
right.
her on Instagram. I follow the Tamara too. But yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right.
But I do want to thank, before we get done, I want to thank you because I think that, no, what you're doing matters. And you putting yourself out there and you providing an example, it is all about trying to make sure that someone sees what's possible. And you are showing so many people what's possible. You're showing them what leadership looks like and stepping up and saying, I'm going to be out here and I'm going to use my voice regardless. And I'm going to, you know, carve a space for myself and for those who support me. And I just think that it matters what you're doing. I'm excited for you. And we can't go this long without talking again.
Right. And I do want to thank you because I think that for women in particular, it's important to have that empowerment. It's important to know that you can reach out to someone and they're not going to slam a door in your face and that, you know, they are going to be that person who, you know, just kind of even gives words of encouragement, not even all other things. And, you know, so I think it's really, that's why I think I base this whole conversation around, you know, mentorship and then having that network of, you know, women who are not only politically active, but then also active in the sphere of storytelling and, you know, just being able to come to, you know, someone who has done it before and come to maybe even someone who's rising and, you know, just be able to know that support is there, know that information is there, and that we're not going to silo information. You know, it should be that we're approachable. It should be that we, you know, are encouraging. And, you know, because society as a whole is then better because, you know, we've enriched each other by, you know, lifting each other up and, you know, particularly with Black women straightening each other's crowns and not tearing each other down. So, thank you so much for being that source of light and inspiration and for all of the work you did for the city of Detroit. and then will continue to do with, you know, consulting. And, you know, I'm just going to, yeah, we cannot go this long without talking again. So, all right. Well, thank you out there, audience, for tuning in and for watching. And yeah. All right. We're going to go ahead and end the live. Bye, everybody.
Hey, bye.
Thanks for listening to the Quick to Politics podcast. I have been your host, Ernestine Lyons. Please remember to support these efforts on Patreon and to follow the podcast and recommend to your friends. Thanks and have a great one.